Folks, I am really excited to talk about our newest sponsor for the coaching staff, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, also All-American Used Cars and Trucks. Two really, really good businesses. I'm going to start with Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. You know, it's hard to find a good mechanic. It's hard to find somebody that you trust. And, you know, long before this situation came about, we had been taking our cars to Ruiz for a year, year and a half, and they've done great, great work. They're honest. They're upfront. They can do everything. They, you know, take care of your motor, take care of your brakes, tires, oil, so simple stuff like oil changes, brake pads, mufflers, whatever you may need. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust are going to take care of it for you. If you are in the Omaha area and you are looking for a quality, reasonably priced, customer-friendly situation, you're not going to regret giving Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust a chance here. They are located at 4839 North 90th Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68134. You could give Esmeralda a call up there. Her number is 402-317-2572. And they'll get you taken care of. I'm saying this as a customer. We literally do not bring our cars anywhere other than Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust for anything that we do from this point for the last year or two. So again, another business here, All American Used Cars or Trucks. If you're in the market for a used car or truck, go check out Juan Carlos's business there. 144th and I-80, 14706 Schooner Road here in Omaha. Go check it out here. If you're looking to exchange a car, buy, sell, trade, whatever it may be, you're going to get an honest deal from honest people. So go check out Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust and All American Used Cars and Trucks. Good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. We are back in the coaching staff, which means I am back here with my co-host, Mr. Tony Devis, out of the CR. And if you don't know what that means, I'll tell you. It is Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Mr. Tony Devis, how are you this fine Thursday afternoon?
Just enjoying another perfect day here in Eastern Iowa. I cannot believe, we're staying in the mid to upper 70s. And just one of those things where I'm not going to complain because in a few months, I will probably be complaining about it being too cold.
I will be complaining as soon as it gets below like a high of 50. After that, that's again, when we get to that point of the year for 3 months, I just walk into the school building every day going, why do I live here? Why do I live here? So, and it's much, much warmer in Omaha than it is where I grew up 2.5 hours north of here. So I'm fully cognizant of that as well. So, it feels almost tropical down here. So, episode number 103, Tony, I've got four basketball players. I've got a bunch of, talk about some great baseball players here, Tony. I'll rattle those off here for you. Babe Ruth, of course. Mm-hmm. Harmon Killebrew, Dale Murphy, who should be in the Hall of Fame. Thank you very much. Alan Trammell, who I can't remember if he's in the Hall of Fame or not.
Should be if he's not. Him and Sweet Lou.
Him and Sweet Lou, yes. And Mel Ott. just a great lineup of number threes, no pun intended. Russell Wilson as a quarterback. I've got four basketball players, Tony, which I was surprised. I thought we'd have more, but I really found only four significant players to wear number three. Two of them still active, two of them retired.
All righty. Let's go with Allen Iverson.
That is one.
Okay. One of my favorite players, I don't know if he made the list because I don't know if I would consider him to be a great player. He's a good player. Dennis Scott?
I did not put him on the list.
Okay. Oh, okay. Now I'm stuck. Threes that are currently.
The most, I don't know, maybe the other than Iverson, probably the most famous three. that you have to
see. Vaughn Marbury?
I did not put him on the list. He was a three, but I just couldn't. I didn't think he was nearly as good as the other three guys.
Okay.
Like a Good Neighbor. State Farm.
Chris
Music.
Paul?
Chris Paul, CP3. So you've got one retired Hall of Famer. Spent a lot of time listening to him on the Olympic broadcasts.
Dwayne Wade.
There it is. And one still active player. Some people think he might have the worst contract in the league. Made it difficult, very difficult, to have his former team trade him. Don't got it?
Nothing is coming to the forefront.
Bradley Beal.
Okay.
Yeah.
I could make an argument. I think Marbury and Dennis Scott might be better than Bradley Beal.
Okay. So I'm going to put Marbury and Dennis Scott on the list. After we're done with it. Ah, you guys made it. All right, here we go.
Late additions.
Yes, late additions. It's been a good week. Tony, how's Brandon liking the book?
He's liking it a lot. The other night when I had talked to him, he said he had to read to a certain point because he had to figure out who won, I think, to page 70, 75, 80, somewhere in there. When you were writing about the state championship the first time they played, he had to finish that one out. And so he was pretty pumped about it.
Good.
How have sales been?
You know, I don't know if you saw it. Yeah, for just a fleeting moment, a brief moment in time, I was ahead of John Feinstein in book sales.
As you should be.
Yeah. Carla is actually the one that found that. And she took, I don't know, she took a quick snap of it or whatever. Yeah. And put it out there on social media. I think it's going good. It's they don't put it on your account for the royalties until it officially ships. But I know it seems like there's a lot of, if I was number one, there must have been, must have been a lot of orders. I'm hoping anyway, fingers crossed. So I don't know. We'll see what happens in the next few days and kind of see how that kind of plays itself out, But yeah, it's good. Had a talk with one of the coaches that are featured in the book, and last night at Coach's Clinic, and he was really, really happy with it. And that's my biggest thing. All three coaches that are the three main characters have been really, really happy with it, and that's the biggest thing that I've been worried about. That's the biggest thing I was worried about is them, the players, the parents that are in it, and everything. That's my biggest thing. So got that, the Stan Van Gundy, pod earlier this week.
I listened to that one.
Yeah. What'd you think?
That was good.
Good.
He just throw the questions out there and let them go, but he's got quite a unique experience and had some really, really good takes. And, I thought the thing that was probably the most, relevant with him was how he was able to look at his failures and be, objective about those. And I thought that was enlightening.
Yes. And that is a great Mike Greenberg segue into handling failure, which I'll be honest with you, Tony, the more season and experience that I got in my career, the more this kind of became a I don't want to call it a passion or anything, but it became a focus of mine. Because I know for me, I was so really, really lucky to be in the situations that I was in. My third year as a real coach, so to speak, and I was still just a student assistant. I mean, we won 37 games in a row. That's so at the collegiate level, not at the high school level, the collegiate level, and it was so. It was such a great run, and you think, well, which one would you like to lose? Well, you didn't want to lose any of them, as one of our dads said that year. I think my first 10 or 11 years really taught me a lot about how to be successful. But at the same time, I was really fortunate enough to be around so many successful situations that I, when failure inevitably hit, and just like with any coach, I mean, it's going to hit at some point. I did a terrible job of handling it, Tony, just an absolutely terrible job. And so I'm really, funnily enough, I'm really excited to talk about this topic today.
It is an important topic. And I think it's one of those things that, you know, as an individual, it's important for you to learn how to handle it, you know, as a coach, and see how you can model that to your players and such. But I think it's also one of those things where you can come alongside your players as they go through those struggles, you know, because life isn't about if failure is going to happen. It's about when it's going to happen. And the pity parties and the tantrums and stuff that it can cause are so unhealthy. And if you can learn how to deal with failure, it helps. It helps so much and helps you to turn things around. And so, yeah, I think this is going to be a fun topic today.
Yeah. So, yeah, you kind of said it there. My first bullet point of my six or seven bullet points is you have to expect it. You have to anticipate it. You know, I know that there's a lot of studies done on positive image and positive self-talk and all of those things. But I also think that you have to, in the nether regions of your mind, no matter how positive you are, you have to know that at some point you're going to have failure. You're going to have a season if you're really set up. And I know I was there a couple of times when I was at Scott where we thought we had things really set up, where we had a chance to be a really, really good team. And then we had failure. We had, and when I say failure, wasn't necessarily failure, like, you know, it led to failure, but that failure came from injuries. You know, one kid, you know, one year I thought we were set up to be really outstanding. Like, I thought we were going to be top two or three in the state, and we had all five starters back, and we had a gal that tore her ACL in the spring. And then right before the season started, a week or two before the season started, we had another returning starter that decided to focus on soccer. And she decided not to go out to play, decided not to play basketball. Now, she ended up coming back out her senior year. And she said, it was the worst mistake I've ever made. It was so dumb of me. I you know, by the time I got to spring soccer for the school, I was so tired of playing soccer and all of that stuff. So, I mean, just a lesson for people and coaches and kids out there. But, you know, because of those things, you know, I was like, gosh, you know, here we just have the rug pulled out from us again and again and again. And so it was frustrating, you know, and I know that, when I, you know, I kind of went through at one point, like, here was my first 10 years of coaching, Tony, and most of those years was as an assistant coach, but there was some head coaching years in there too, where 15 and 15, and then we went 25 and 12 and made it to the last eight in the country, 37 and 1, 31 and 3. 1 year as a head coach in high school, we were like 18 and 5, 19 and 5, something like that. Then went back to the college game and we were like 24 and 8, and then 28 and 4. And then, I was at Heelan, and that was the year we made it to state championship game. And we were 23 and 3. I mean, just these crazy records. And then finally I hit up, you know, so you just think, well, this is what's supposed to happen every year, especially when you're young and naive. And got to a year where we went 10 and 12. And boy, do you think I handled that very well? No. Handled it really, really bad because I did not ever anticipate failure happening. So that's my opening salvo. Take that wherever you'd like, buddy.
Yeah, I think when you take a look at failure, you know, kind of like what you did there, Marty, is you have to reflect on it. Because when you go and you take a look at it, one of the things that I think super important, you know, a lot of times we talk about winning and losing, and don't get me wrong, there are winners and losers in athletic contests. But one of the things I like to kind of put in there instead of losing is learning.
Yeah.
And so when you take the time to reflect on, hey, it didn't work out here, what went wrong? And so if you can understand the factors that caused the failure to come about, then what can happen is you can make those tweaks, you can make those changes so that it kind of provides insight for you to have success in the future. And so I think that's one of the big things. You know, friend of mine coaches shooting sports here in town at Coe College. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he talks about, you know, is he tries to make sure with shooting sports, he's a little bit more, I don't know, distance is the right word, but kind of allows them to get in the zone, so to speak. And he has kind of an idea of how he wants things to flow. And one time they were messing around, and he said it really, really bothered him that they weren't taking it seriously and putting in the preparation and stuff as they got ready to shoot, you know, hour, 2 hours down the road or whatever the case may be, but that they didn't have really good results that day.
Yeah.
And that led him to have some really good conversations with them about what caused this. And so I think reflection is one of the big things, because of the fact that it allows you to figure out, because I'll be honest with you, I think failure is one of, if not the best teacher in life. I've learned way more from my failures than I ever have from my successes.
Yeah, that was another one of my bullet points, Tony, was, you know, it's literally great lessons to be learned from it. And you take those things, the urgency that you have when you lose far outweighs the urgency that you have when you quote unquote win. And it forces you to, if you're any sort of competitor, you're going to look at yourself in the mirror first and foremost. There's times, again, when I was younger, probably didn't do that as well as I needed to. I grew up quickly, I'd like to think, but you know, those lessons needed to be learned, and it's just such a great opportunity to examine. Okay, how did we do that? And I know one of the things that I would do with my teams from time to time after a disappointing effort, or like, I'm guessing it was Patrick that you're talking about there.
Yeah. Yep. PC.
Yep. You know, you kind of do the Socratic method the next day with your team. Okay. How do you think we came out yesterday? Okay. We didn't come out the way, we all admit that we didn't come out the way that we wanted to. Well, why did we do that? What did we do beforehand? What could we have done differently? What do we need to do differently the next time? You know, and I think those are just those are conversations I know I had with my teams on numerous occasions when failure would inevitably happen.
Yeah. And it is, like you said, Marty, it's going to, it's not a case of if, it's more of a case of when. And then you want to go through and see, can you pinpoint the reasons why? Because a lot of times it's not a reason, it's complex reasons. And trying to get to that is so very important. You know, the old quote, you know, failing to plan is planning to fail. Yeah. And I think that's a part of things, that's a big part of it, is the preparation to win is almost as important as the game itself. Because you know, for example, we're in the middle of football season, you know, you win based on Monday through Thursday. Friday is kind of a performance, but your preparation is what leads you to either that success or failure on Friday night. Mm-hmm.
In 1993, Counting Crows referred to Omaha as somewhere in Middle America. More people know Omaha as the home of Warren Buffett, the Union Pacific Railroad, and the College World Series. Athletically, Nebraska is known for its dominance in college and high school football and volleyball, while basketball has perennially been on the back burner. But for one season, in its largest city, basketball was king of the state. In a time of social and political turmoil in our country, three high school boys basketball teams from Omaha, Nebraska were ranked in the top 25 in the country, featuring some of the best talent that one city has ever produced anywhere in the country. Amongst these three teams were 9 Division I basketball players, and all 15 starters from these three teams played collegiate athletics at various levels for at least 2 seasons. Kings of their court, 3 teams, 1 city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history begins with the chaotic ending of the 2020 state tournament as the whole world was shutting down due to the COVID-19 virus. Over the span of the next year, these players, coaches, and parents navigated their basketball futures while also, like the rest of the United States and the world, worked through COVID quarantines, the George Floyd murders, and riots, the political turmoil of the 2020 presidential campaign, and much more. 1 year later, the destinies of these three teams would intertwine themselves for the final time at the 2021 Nebraska State Basketball Tournament, where the crescendo to this story occurred 365 days after it began, with some of the best high school basketball any state has ever seen. Kings of their court, 3 teams, 1 city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history – is the story of highly driven individuals searching to achieve lifelong dreams and aspirations, both on and off the basketball floor, during a season that almost didn't happen. Kings of Their Court will be published on October the 1st, Tuesday, October the 1st. Kindle copies are $9.99. Paperback copies are $19.99. Copies are eligible to be pre-ordered today, so be sure to get on Amazon.com and pre-order your copy of Kings of Their Court. What else you got, Tony?
Another one, and I think you kind of touched on this a little bit, is emotional management. You know, when you take a look at when failure happens, you should be disappointed. That's a normal feeling. But to go to the extremes, you know, and I'm not talking about you specifically, but to go to the extremes and throw a pity party, or to get, you know, really upset and mad, you know, because it didn't go your way, and pout about it, that's not the way to handle it. You know, you need to be able to process your emotions. But you also have to understand that as those emotions come through and you're processing what you're going through, you also have to be able to shift them. Because if you stay there in that pit, if you will, you're not going to be able to work your way and climb your way out of it. So you have to, at some point, be able to shift from disappointment, be able to shift from, you know, discouragement, be able to shift out of that and move on. Because most of the time, you know, don't get me wrong, there's always that game that ends it, you know, whether it's the postseason or if you didn't qualify for the postseason for whatever reason, but you have to get ready for that next one. And that's super important because, you know, whether you win or lose, you know, like you've talked about before, until your head hits the pillow, enjoy it. But once you get up that next morning, it's time to get back to work again.
Yeah. You, I think you're looking over my shoulder this week, Tony, because I basically had that written down as well. Acknowledge it, acknowledge the failure, move on, learn from it, and then move on. That's one of my bullet points I had written down is, yeah. And I know, again, Tony, you know, being more seasoned and experienced, there were times, especially early in my career, boy, I would just hang on to losses. And I've often said your greatest strengths are also your greatest weaknesses, right? And man, my, you know, competitive is all get out. Hate to lose. Drives me crazy. Looking up at the ceiling at night. But it also was a tremendous weakness as well. It was something that was not a positive thing. And therefore I do think that it trickled down into certain teams. There were certain kids that I coached that really, really thrived on that. I do feel like that we went through a stretch of 3 to 5 years where I just had kids that just didn't react well to it. Is that their fault? I don't know. Is it my fault? I'll accept the blame for it. You know, because I think there's things that I could have managed better. But moving on from it and letting go of it. And that's where I really came about that phrase, you know, because I had to learn of a better way to manage it, you know, especially over the course of a long season. So if we had success that night, if we win, hey, enjoy it till your head hits the pillow. If we lost, let it bother you till your head hits the pillow. And in some ways, that was for me as much as well, because I fully just had trouble moving on from things.
Yeah, and I'm in the same boat. And so a lot of the things that, you know, we're talking about here, you know, if you're talking about like pointing fingers or whatever, there's three of them pointing back at me. And that was hard for me, because one of the things that motivates me is when somebody tells me I can't do something, that motivates me to try to prove them wrong. And when you take a look at this, one of the things that I think I had to do a better job of is the losses bothered me way more than the wins pumped me up.
The joy of
it. And that was something that was really, really hard for me to come to grips with. And so it is one of those things where you just have to learn to let it go, learn from it, flush it, and move on.
Mm-hmm. Did you see what your guy Nick Saban said on the pregame before Georgia and Alabama the other night about the two cards?
Yeah.
What is your plan if you're going to lose? You know, it's easy to go in that locker room and be really upbeat, especially if it's a big game, if it's Georgia, Alabama, or whatever it may be. But what's your plan if you're going to lose? I know there's been times where I've thought about that before the game. You know, hey, what would I say if we lose this game? What, you know, and obviously it depends on kind of how the game goes as well. You know, that plays into the dynamic. But if you haven't seen that clip, basically Coach Saban said, hey, I always had two cards in my back pocket. You know, what am I going to say to the team if we win? What am I going to say to the team if we lose? And I think that's it. Because how many times do we go into a locker room and say the wrong thing out of emotion, especially after a tough loss? And I thought, man, that's a great idea to really kind of think about how you're going to address your team after the game. And again, as high school teachers and coaches, sometimes we don't have as much time as Nick Saban does to focus on those things. But I that really hit me square in the eyes. And I just happened to see it. I think it was yesterday, Tony. I saw it on Twitter. And I thought that was a great point. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that is great. And then the one thing I would sticking with that same game, I don't know if you saw the clip of how Kirby Smart handled his locker room after losing to Alabama on Saturday night, but it was a masterclass in terms of how he handled it. He told them how proud he was. They were down 28-0, and they just kept fighting, took the lead, basically were just one play short of coming back and pulling off a huge comeback at the number four team in the nation on their home field. And so what he went in there and did and said, I think, has Georgia primed to basically run the table the rest of the way and maybe see Alabama again a second time and perhaps even a third time in the playoffs. So just was a masterclass by Coach Smart.
And that's what everybody wants, though, right?
Yeah.
Hey, let's get more SEC football on TV. So. I've got two more things, Tony. How many you got?
Yeah, I've got a few more as well.
Go ahead.
The next one, I think if you take a look at failure, and again, talking about this with both from a coaching perspective and with a player's perspective, like if there's failure that's happening, I think what's happening is you're not meeting your goals. I think that's a part of it. Like you're not getting toward your goals. That's why failure is happening. And so what you may need to do, both as a coach and as a player, is you may need to go in there and adjust your goals. Like your goals too high and unattainable, because that's one of the things that I think that sometimes we run across with goal setting is we put goals out there. Hey, I want to win the state championship. That's great, but only one team per class does that. And so if you don't have the horses, so to speak, to get that done, are you setting them up for failure where, man, we didn't win the state title, but you know, we won conference, we won the district, we did whatever. And so sometimes you have to go through and make sure that you don't just have that one ultimate goal at the end. You have these steps that come into play that help you get to realistic, attainable goals. And so I think goal setting is one of those things where they can provide motivation and also provide a path, if you will, for improvement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you can have that, you know, you get a kid who says, I want to start on varsity this year. And you're like, you're coming off the bench for the freshman. And if that's their goal, boy, that's going to be a hard goal to reach. And again, kind of going into my own failures that I've had in my career, I think there was a time, again, I had so much early success that I felt like, well, if we weren't playing in a state tournament or playing for a state championship, that, well, we're a failure. Our team is a failure. The season's been a failure. When, you know, I had a couple of those teams that just really maxed out and gave everything that they had, you know, mm-hmm. and should have celebrated that a little bit more. And probably I had, now that's a fine line, Tony. You don't, you know, as a coach, you never want to be okay with mediocrity. You also have to be realistic too. So how do you find that? I think that's one of those art of coaching type of situations where you can't be, if you go 14-10, you know, okay, yeah, for that group, that was probably a good year, but man, that's not good enough for where we want our program to be at consistently. And so that's that, I don't know, that's something I struggle with. What about you, Tony? I mean, I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, I think sometimes, you know, when we get those teams that overachieve, that get so much more out of themselves than what they probably should have, sometimes there becomes that greed in us where, man, you want to push them further. And you might be maxing out where you're at that point. And sometimes you just need to sit back and celebrate them and help them to feel that they are enough and what they're doing is fantastic and great, rather than continuing to, you know, let's push harder, let's go further, because they might not be able to get to that point. Now, you're never going to come out and say that those words directly to them, but you do need to take the time to celebrate those things that they are doing, the success that they are having, rather than making them feel like they don't quite measure up.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I had written down, ironically enough, is quite the opposite of that, Tony. If you're not failing, you are not challenging yourself enough. And we see this a lot in like youth sports, teams that kind of sandbag, you know, you're going into the Cedar Rapids Kennedy tournament and you've got your sixth grade team and I think we should be in the bronze division. And you got, you know, two sixth graders that are 6'2" and they're shaving and that type of thing. And I really looked at this through the lens of summer basketball. You want to go out and you want to find that appropriate level of competition that's going to push you. And you don't want to go 5-25 for your summer, but you also don't want to go 28-2 unless, I mean, if you're really, really good, like, okay, we can't find anything better than this and we're still winning. Well, that's a great problem to have, you know, that's okay. But if you're doing the, like I said, the sixth graders that could shave and you're playing in the bronze division just so you could win games, that doesn't make any sense to me at all. You've got to, at times, go out and seek failure. If you've got a really good team, and you know you're going to go on a run for 2 or 3 years, you got to go out and challenge yourself. You know, if I'd have stayed at my previous job here, the goal was definitely to upgrade the schedule. I wanted us to go out and, okay, we can kind of compete with the fringe top 10 teams here in the state, perhaps, let's say. Let's find the top five, let's find a top seven, top three, so forth and so on, and let's really challenge ourselves. Let's play, try to get into one of those special shootouts or whatever to put ourselves in a situation where, okay, if we do make it to the state tournament, Are we used to kind of the bright lights and a special situation, not just showing up at the gym and playing type of a thing, you know? I wanted us to be in those situations, and that was kind of the plan. We're kind of moving into a phase where for the next 2 or 3 years we've got a chance to be really, really strong against our current schedule. So let's seek out a couple of games that we might lose, but it's going to make us better and to some degree, seek out some failure to help improve us for the long run.
Mm-hmm. You know, I go back to your book that you were writing about the team that went to Grand Island and played in that big tournament there, and they were able to knock off Oak Hill, and what that did for their confidence and let them know that, hey, they can do some pretty special things here. But yeah, I think that is important. And one of the things I respect about, you know, Coach McCowan, who I'm on his staff right now, is they seek out the best. Like, they have this, our league is the Mississippi Valley, and the league in the Des Moines area is the CIML. They do like an MVC CIML challenge. And so he goes out there and plays two CIML teams during the season after playing in our conference, which is one of the best conferences in the state. But he's all the time pushing and trying to challenge teams and help them to reach their potential. So 100% understand where you're coming from on that one.
Yep. I've got one more thing, Tony.
Yeah, I've got a couple. The first one I would go with, and you mentioned this earlier about the whole positive self-talk thing. And I think that's a key strategy that we as coaches can not only pass along to our players, because I think that's such a big thing, because when players, you know, have the tendency when failure happens, oh, I suck, or I can't do this, or whatever, give them some strategies to be able to talk themselves through it. So, for example, I can't do this yet. Mm-hmm. And help them with their positive self-talk, because if you think you can, you're potentially right. Yeah. If you think you can't, you're definitely right.
Yeah.
And so I think that's something. And then the other thing too, not only passing those skills and strategies onto our players, but as coaches, that's something that we have to practice as well, that positive self-talk with ourselves, so that when, you know, there's a dead ball or a timeout or a quarter break, that you can go in and speak greatness into your players rather than beating them down. And so that's a strategy that maybe I myself need to get better at and implement.
Yeah. I really, you know, I love those inside the huddles with the NBA, and just, I actually wrote down NBA huddle talk or NBA talk or whatever it might be. Because most of those times, most of the time, those coaches are really, really positive in their huddles, that type of a thing. And you know, I agree with you there, Tony. That was something when I was younger, definitely not again, failed. I think I got better at that as things went along. So, the last thing that I had was, failures, in many ways can be a blessing, and not, I mean, losing games in sometimes can be a blessing. You know, sometimes your team needs a little, reminder that they're not as good as what they think that they are. You know, but again, kind of what we talked about, why'd you say, you know, strengthening your bond, you know, you lose in the state tournament, in the first round, but you got a lot of your kids back, man, that could be something that can be a real motivator for you for the next year. And bringing that together, we are not going to allow that to happen to us again next year. We're going to come together as a group and different things like that, where in the short term, yeah, that can just, it can hurt like crazy. You know, for us as coaches, I didn't, you know, I applied for the job at West High and I didn't get it. I really felt like I should get it. You know, I went through that, when I was at Scutt. I was assistant with the girls for 2 years and the boys position came open and I wanted to be a head coach, and, they didn't give it to me. And you know what, looking back on it, Tony, I didn't deserve the job at that point. I wasn't as prepared as I should have been. And, so the next year when the girls position came open, you sure as heck, I made sure that I was ready, man. I had all my ducks in a row. I went in with to the administration. Here's my plan. Here's this step by step by step by step. And, you know, obviously got the job. And so that was something that really taught me a lesson about failure. You know, after a little bit of self-reflection and I was upset, you know, and I pouted without a doubt. I pouted. But man, the next time it came up, I learned from it and it strengthened me. It made me look at things and yeah, it was go time, you know? So that was my last big point.
Yeah. People use that phrase, you know, the comeback is going to be better than a setback. And I think failure can help that. It builds resilience. And sometimes we look at failure like, oh, I never want to experience that. And like I said earlier, I think failure is one of, if not the best teacher out there. The other one that I would throw at you is, and you brought up Nick Saban earlier, and this is kind of my Nick Saban point here, is to focus on the process. You know, I think a lot of times what we take a look at is we get to like the end result, the win or the loss. And so when you go through and take a look at the process, I want to win this possession. I want to win this quarter. I want to be up at halftime, you know, and you begin to go through that step by step. This is my game plan of how I'm going to get to where I want to get to. And it helps that improvement quite a bit. It's like, you know, it's on steroids where you improve so much quicker when you take and focus in on the process. And the other thing I would throw at you as well is a lot of times, you know, we talk about wanting to win a championship. And a lot of times what happens is when we win that title, what we figure out is it's cold and lonely up there. And what we need to make sure that we're doing is to emphasize the journey and the memories that you're making being a part of a team and come to appreciate and almost enjoy, if you will, the pressure that comes along with winning. And so I think that's a part of it as well.
Yeah, it's, I had a situation, I had a friend who won a championship, and it actually kind of sent him into a little bit of a spiral, because he had chased it and chased it and chased it. And then, you know, turned out to be not what he thought it might be, you know? So I think that's really true. I think that, you know, one of Wooden's favorite quotes is from Cervantes' Don Quixote, you know, the journey is better than the end. And enjoy every step along the way. And yeah, all of that stuff that you said, Tony, just perfect. Absolutely perfect. A Pen and a Napkin University videos are just another way that a pen and a napkin can help you become a better coach. Our university video library is constantly expanding with topics ranging from interviewing for a job to full court defense to 25 universal truths about coaching. Our university videos will help you round out your skill set as a coach and help you hone your craft. Videos are $10 a piece with bundling options available. To order, you can DM me on Twitter, send me an email at apenandanapkin@gmail.com, or order from our website, apenandanapkin.com. Be sure to check out the A Pen and a Napkin video library. Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. But you know, Tony, who is always perfect all of the time?
Europeans.
It is the Europeans. They are perfect. They are the best. And it is time for this week's trivia, Tony. Hopefully this, I don't know how good of a question this is. I think you're actually gonna get this pretty easily. That's my prediction. So, but Asia Wilson.
I plan to underwhelm you.
Asia Wilson, WNBA MVP, still in the playoffs. We'll get to that in just a minute or two. She is, of course, trying to win a championship. Who is the last WNBA MVP to win a championship the same season?
Ooh, this is more difficult than what I think you think it is. Let's see here. Would it be, go on a limb here, would it be her? Because this is her third MVP. And so would it be her from the previous season?
Yes, and it counts. Tony Viss from the baseline and one.
Yes, Asia Wilson, 2022. Yeah, so nailed it, buddy.
Blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while.
Yeah, hey, I feel so happy for you that I think I should treat you to...
Want to eat. Always, we have the meat.
So, Tony, our Arby's winner this week, not quite Joel Embiid from last week, who made a pretty penny. This week's Arby's winner, Jose Alvarado, the backup point guard for the New Orleans Pelicans.
Pelicans?
Yes. 2 years, $9 million, also known as February on Tony's paycheck. But Alvarado is our Arby's winner. You can still do some damage at an Arby's with that kind of cash.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you could. I mean, you might not be able to buy a franchise with it, but you could get maybe two of the roast beef and cheddar.
Yeah. And if you did get two of those roast beef and cheddars, Mel Allen would say,
"How about that?"
So we got a lot to talk about here in our TWIB segment, Tony. Let's start with the aforementioned Asia Wilson and the WNBA playoffs. Las Vegas down 2-0, best of five. And our other series between Connecticut and Minnesota tied up 1-1. Your thoughts, my friend?
I'm going to go with the Aces and Liberty series first. I felt like the Aces gave away game two. They're in really, really good position to win that. And unfortunately, didn't execute the greatest down the stretch. But the thing that I was kind of surprised with was Becky Hammon's comments after the game. Talking about how difficult it is to three-peat, and she feels like her team has lost their edge, hasn't played with that edge all year long. And so I was a little bit surprised by that. But at the same time, if they come back and do the reverse sweep where they're from three after losing the first two, she'll look like a genius.
Yeah. I was really, like a lot of people, she really came out and ripped them, and I saw some of game two. I didn't see all of game two. As the social studies guy, I chose to fulfill my civic duty and I watched the VP debate. I was really surprised. Now, maybe that's something in the postseason press conference. I thought maybe that would have been a little bit, but maybe she's saying, I don't want to wait till the postseason. We've got to come out. And I really thought I watched the entire first half of the game and a little bit of the second half. But very, very physical to start out with. They got off to a great start. New York came back, ended up taking the lead at halftime. And they knew it was do or die, and I think it's going to be really, really hard for them to come back, and it's going to be really hard for them to come back and win three straight against a team that only lost like eight games in the entire regular season. Not to say that it hasn't been done before, see LeBron, Cleveland, 2016, that type of thing, but I think there's some truth to it. I mean, what do you think, Tony? Probably some truth to it. I know they dealt with some injuries this year, but they were not nearly as sharp as they were last year.
I would agree with that. And, we kind of discussed a little bit in terms of an older team, the way she's handled the roster a little bit. Obviously Chelsea Gray wasn't healthy towards the beginning of the season. Asia Wilson has had a season for the ages. Kelsey Plum's kind of been up and down a little bit as far as things go. I think they've if they had won game two, in a game that they very easily could have won, it would have been interesting to see her reaction if they had split New York. Then that puts them in the driver's seat. They're really not that far away. I don't see them beating the Liberty three straight, but I think they can win at least one, if not both games in Vegas and force it to go to a game.
Yeah. Here's for those of you that haven't heard what she said, I'll read it here. I'm not mad at the officials. I'm not mad at the New York Liberty. I'm mad at us because of the amount of layups we're giving up. It was a thing in the first game, a thing in the second game. And if it's going to be a thing in the third, we're not going to win. They're too good. We were the best team last year. They've been the best team this year because of their habits, their edge that they've had the entire year, their incredible attention to detail. Quite frankly, we haven't had that edge. Now we found it in the last month. But the feel was different from the jump of this series. This is why three-peating is hard. The whole league has been upset for the last 8 months. My players are in commercials and this and that, and being celebrities, and you get distracted. That's why it's hard. Human nature is distracting. And I know there was one time in the second quarter, they came off a television timeout, not even a minute after the television timeout, some gal from New York made a straight line drive and made a layup 5-on-5, and she called a timeout. And because this is a PG-13 podcast, I cannot repeat what I saw her lips say. But she would get a detention at Cedar Rapids Kennedy for the language that she used in the huddle, and Fort Calhoun as well. Don't get me wrong. How do you battle that? It's difficult because you want the. Especially in the way the league has exploded the last year or two, you want those players to reap the benefits of their success and to be financially stable and to get the advertisements and the sponsorships and the those type of things that to improve their brand. But, you know, it seems like, or the way she's not even insinuating it, she thinks that they've gotten too focused on that stuff and not stayed as hungry as they should be and realize the reason why they're getting the endorsements that they got.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those things that you go through and you take a look at it, but that edge and that motivation's not there and you're, you know, not pursuing it with an intensity and a passion. It's really, really hard. She has a really good team, but the Liberty are really good. The Lynx are really good. You know, you go through the Sun are really good, and there's not that much difference between 1 through 4 in that league. Those four teams are probably, if you take a look overall, these might be the best four in terms of the quality of the depth there in the history of the WNBA.
Yep. Thoughts on the Sun Lynx series? Tied 1-1. Again, was watching the VP debate, so I'll be honest with you, I didn't watch any of game two. Sounds like it got really, really chippy. Watched some stuff from game one. Nafisha Collier was awesome, but Mabry was better, you know, or she was the key component coming off the bench, shooting the threes and that type of thing. So, yeah, I mean, I think this one's probably destined to go five, don't you think?
It's definitely going to go five, and it is very, very chippy, very physical. There were numerous times where teammates had to come in and intercept a player from going after and fighting another player. This one is very interesting. It's one of those where you pop the popcorn, you sit back and you watch it, because it's very physical, very chippy, two teams that won't back down. Yep. I think when everything is said and done and the fifth game is done, you're going to see a lot of respect being shown both ways. Right now, they don't like each other.
And that's the way it should be.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's just competition, and that's what we want, right, buddy?
Exactly. I mean, it goes back to the 1980s Celtics, Lakers, Celtics, Sixers, Pistons, Bulls to a certain extent as well. I mean, you don't like each other. And all of a sudden, when we got into this creating super teams and playing with your buddies, we've lost this. And that's what you don't see in the WNBA, is you don't see that playing with your buddies thing. Like, you go out and you compete. And Marina Mabry, you know, I was reading a little bit on her, was talking about in college, you know, she played with Agumba Wale and Jackie Young. And she said she kind of throttled down her game. And now with being with the Sun, they don't want her to throttle down her game. And there are times consistently she looks like the best player on the floor, and that's pretty hard when Nafisha Collier, I'm sorry, is on the other team.
Yeah, yeah, she has been a tremendous addition to the Sun. She has been the perfect player for them to come in. Everything you would want out of a midseason trade. So, yeah, I could see the Aces salvaging a game in Las Vegas, but I don't think they're going to go back to New York. That's my amateur prediction, and I would say right now, yeah, I think the Lynx and the Sun are headed for five, and they will be heading back to the land of 10,000 lakes. How about you, buddy?
Yeah, I could see, you know, it's not in the realm of possibility for the Aces and the Liberty to go five. I think four, and then the other one, I think it's a foregone conclusion. It's going five.
Yeah. Let's talk a little NBA here, getting ready for training camps, and obviously we'll be doing our predictions here in a little bit, but a big trade that shook up the predictions and maybe our previous predictions on the Atlantic Division, the big trade here in the preseason, Karl-Anthony Towns to the Knicks for Julius Randle and Dante DiVincenzo. We never get to see the Nova Knicks in full throttle form. 3 out of 4 ain't bad. They still got Josh Hart, Brunson, and now they'll have Mikal Bridges. Winners and losers of the trade, Tony. What'd you think of it?
Marty, do I dare step out and say it's a win-win for both? You know, I think as I look at things, Julius Randle to the T-Wolves, he's going to feel like he's wanted there. Dante DiVincenzo gives him a great 3-point shooter, because when Ant penetrates, he needs people to be able to spray it to knock it down. And I think DiVincenzo is a really good fit. And the other thing that they got in that trade as well that wasn't mentioned, in a first round draft pick.
Yeah.
And so I really like the trade for both. You know, I'm not the biggest Cat guy. Not that I don't like his game. He shoots the three well. He's going to stretch your five out. But him having to play the five, you know, they're going to need Mitchell Robinson to come back because Cat's really more of a four than he is a five.
Yeah.
And when you take a look at it, you know, Mitchell Robinson is going to be out, I would guess, potentially up to 3 months.
Yeah, that's
you know,
what they said. Yep.
And so they needed something, and you couldn't have Julius Randle play an undersized five that long. I mean, Cat 6'10", 6'11", shoots a three well, you know, and if Tibbs signs off on it, Tibbs obviously had him when he was the T-Wolves coach. So there's a little bit of that too, where I'm like, but if you made me pick the winner, I'm probably going to go Minnesota on this one, but I think it's a win-win for both.
I agree. The biggest reason why I like it for Minnesota is, well, I'm going to tell you, you know, one of the things I'm looking at New York's depth chart. Now, you know, Thibodeau changes the settings of the game to no subs anyway. So it's mm-hmm. okay. This is like his dream where he basically only has six or six and a half guys to play right now. So he's like, this is perfect. This is what I was made for. But you know, their starting five is really impressive right now. Brunson, Bridges, Anunoby, Josh Hart, and Cat. Now I think when Mitchell Robinson eventually gets back, Josh Hart comes off the bench. But you know, you got Miles McBride, Precious Achiuwa, Campaign, Jericho Sims. I mean, there's not a lot there to supplement that outstanding starting five. And you know, big, you know, the Celtics still had Peyton Pritchard, Sam Hauser, Al Horford, I know I'm missing somebody from the Celtics rotation, but they just had more depth along with that loaded starting five. Now that starting five is really, really good. What I really like you said, Tony, I take a look at the Timberwolves now, and you've got, you know, Conley, Edwards, McDaniels, Randall, and Gobert, but you bring in Naz Reid, who may end up playing as much or more than Gobert and Randall. You got DiVincenzo as your backup guard. Now that, you know, Dillingham doesn't have to come in and do as much as a rookie, he's still going to play as a rookie. He's still going to give him minutes as a rookie. Nikhil Alexander-Walker. I think this might have, if it comes down to Minnesota and let's say Oklahoma City, boy, that's going to be a heck of a series for the Western Conference Finals. Because I think if both of these teams stay healthy, I think they're going to be right there. I think this is a really, really good fit for Minnesota. I think Randall will be a good fit. I really like it for Minnesota. I don't dislike it for New York, but I just worry about their depth.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and one other piece that the T-Wolves got, and I get he's a rookie, but Terrence Shannon Jr., I think, is going to have a really strong rookie year for the T-Wolves. But yeah, I think the T-Wolves closed the gap on OKC. I don't know if they passed them. OKC might be a little bit better yet. And then you throw in Dallas with them getting Clay. That's going to be a really fun Western Conference. But I'm going to be honest, Marty, and I may be going back on what I had said earlier when we did the predictions of the Atlantic. I still don't know if New York has enough to beat either Boston or Philly in the playoffs.
And I agree with you. And I think this, again, they are so thin. They are so, so very thin. And they're not very big. And Karl Anthony Towns is basically their only size right now, and he's prone to get in foul trouble. So yeah, I think this makes it if you could set the settings to no subs, New York would be right there with anybody. But that starting five is really, really good, but it's the 6 through 9 that really worries me for them, especially with Mitchell Robinson still out and his health has been you know, come and go at best. So, let's talk about the passing of a legend of the game here. Dikembe Mutombo, only 58 years old, passes away of brain cancer. One of the most unique players to ever play the game. Great shot blocker, tremendous defensive player, multiple-time defensive player of the year, and one of the best humanitarians that the game has ever produced, coming out of Africa, ending up at Georgetown. Him and Alonzo Mourning played together in college, giving back to the continent of Africa, developing NBA Africa, and trying to get young people, young kids, to have the opportunity to make the same journey that he did. You know, and all this stuff. And again, you know, somebody passes away, you're not going to have too many people say bad things about you. At least you hope you wouldn't. But I haven't heard anybody say a bad thing about Mutombo and just who he was. You can just tell this was a guy that just loved living life. And, you know, may he rest in peace. And hopefully his family is handling things as best they can.
Yeah, you know, I go through and I take a look at a few different things about Bikembe, and you mentioned, you know, a lot of them there, Marty, with the fact that he was one of the best defensive players ever to play the game of basketball. But as you kind of alluded to earlier, he was probably a better human being than he was a basketball player. Mm-hmm. You know, when one of the tributes that was given by him, or for him, I'm sorry, was by his son.
Yeah.
And when your son says that you're his hero, you've done something right, you know. And you talked about the NBA for Africa. I remember the other stories of him having African children come to the United States and him paying for the trip and for their surgeries that they got while here in America, you know, whether it was at Mayo Clinic or another hospital. And I think at one time when he first went to Georgetown, I think Dikembe was a pre-med major, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong on that. Somebody might want to fact check me there, but just a sad thing, you know, too young at 58. And like you said, you know, we hope that he rests in peace.
Coaches, you know just as well as I do that we're always looking for new and different ways to motivate our players and programs. But sometimes it's hard to find that perfect source that we're looking for. Over the past 25 years, I've collected hundreds of handouts to help motivate my players and programs. And now I'd like to share some of my favorites with you. The A Pen and a Napkin 101 Best Handouts booklet is now available to you for only $15. In this booklet, you'll find motivational material for all types of situations and individuals to help you communicate your values to your players and program. For ordering information, you can either DM me on Twitter or email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com for details.
Well, Tony, let's dive into our NBA predictions here. And again, our predictions kind of got a little bit changed up here with this trade because we're talking about the NBA Northwest. This week, we've got five teams, as we do in every division. I think it's my turn to go first here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yep. Okay, so pretty easy fifth pick here. They will be sagging for flag, and that will be the Portland Trailblazers. They are in the middle of a perpetual rebuild, it feels like, right now. They've got some pieces that may have some value on the trade market. They're kind of overran at small guards and centers. So what are they going to do there? I would anticipate that they would try to trade at least two of those three centers. And I would think with Klingon being their future franchise guy, I don't know, maybe DeAndre Ayton is that guy. I think Robert Williams III, once he gets healthy and gets some minutes, I think he's gone at the trade deadline. And I don't mean that so callously. He's a human being that's going to have to uproot his life. So excuse me for saying it in that fashion. But I could see Jeremy Grant also moving on. At some point, they're going to have to make some decisions with Scoot Henderson and Anfernee Simons and Shaedon Sharpe. You know, are they going to package some of this? But I think they're going to sag for flag in a very, very healthy way this season.
You know, I go through and I agree with a lot of what you're saying about them. They have some nice pieces and things like that. You know, I think if you go through, Scoot had a pretty rough rookie year. I was early on Scoot thinking that he might be the rookie of the year, but we had some health issues with injuries. Yep. and different things that went along those way. I think he played a little bit better second half of the year and such. But one of those things where I take a look at them and there's some intriguing pieces. And I agree with what you said. They need to move some guys.
Yep.
They definitely see Robert Williams III being moved. I don't think they're going to move Ayton quite yet. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking with them, they're probably hoping that what ends up happening is he plays well and can get them some trade value. Mm-hmm. And then eventually they're going to turn the thing over to Donovan Clingan. But mm-hmm. that I think is probably more next year. Get Ayton through this year. And I guess Ayton has looked pretty good as far as training camp and stuff, but you know, everybody looks pretty good in training camp. I agree that moving Jeremy Grant is probably a good move on their part, but the big thing that's going to be hard on that one for them is he makes almost $30 million. And so they might have to eat some of that money before they're able to move him. But I'm going to be honest, Marty, I don't know if they're a whole lot worse than Utah Jazz.
Yeah, it was a toss-up. Yep.
And so to kind of get to where I'm going in a long-winded sort of way, I'm going to put Utah in the fifth spot, and I'm going to put the Portland Trail Blazers in the fourth spot. There's enough young talent there that I look at them as a little bit better right now and a little bit more upside than Utah. The one area I think Utah is superior in is coaching, mm-hmm. but I like the Trailblazer roster better. But like you mentioned, they do need to move some things and see what they can get in return. And I don't think they're going to get players in return. I think they want draft picks.
Yeah, they're both going to be sagging for flag. You know, and Lauri Markkanen re-signed. I kind of saw him as the difference between them and Portland. Like they had the dude. They had the one dude. All things being equal, they have Lauri Markkanen, who will probably get them 2, 3, 4 more wins. But if either one of these teams are above 25, 27 wins, I'd be really, really surprised.
Okay.
Yep. So we have a log jam here at the top, Tony. Denver, Minnesota, Oklahoma City. Three really, really, you could have three of the top, what, 5 or 6 teams in the league in one division here?
I agree. It kind of, in a way, reminded me of the Atlantic Division, yep. You know, with Boston, New York, and Philly. The one thing I would say here, though, is I think that Denver's success with winning the title not that long ago, and then all of a sudden you have, you know, they lose a couple pieces off the bench, and then KCP has left. I think Denver is a distant third from those other two.
I had Denver third as well, Tony. They've lost too much. I hate to say it. And, as you know, I'm a little bit of a closet Nuggets fan.
It's true,
you know. But Bruce Brown, Jeff Green, and you know Bruce Brown was a big one. But Jeff Green and then you know KCP, another huge one. And you know the. I mean, Russell Westbrook at this point of his career, is he really the solution? I know the answer to the question, but Dario Saric, I think decent signing for a backup center, but you know, and from what I've heard through the tea leaves is Calvin Booth and Mike Malone are not exactly on the same page with this. Mm-hmm. Mike Malone's like, we have one of the best 15 players ever, and you're trying to develop young guys behind him. We need to go for as many championships as we possibly can right now because guys like Jokic don't come along very long, very often.
Yeah.
They still have a very good, those top four, Jamal Murray, Michael Porter, Aaron Gordon, Nikola Jokic. Those four are really, really good pieces that fit very well together. I think Christian Braun is Brown is a solid fifth guy, but it's kind of like the Knicks. Boy, there's a big drop off once you get into the bench, and I think that's I had them third as well too. Go ahead, Mike.
I was just going to say, I think it's even a bigger drop off to their bench than the Knicks.
Yes.
You've got some guys like Trey Alexander. I just don't know. I mean, I don't really see him taking off. I know Deron Holmes is a guy that they're high on. I don't know on that one. That's a lot to gamble on. Zeke Nagy is another one. You know, you mentioned Dario Saric earlier, Julian Strother, Peyton Watson. Those are just a lot of unknowns. And so, you know, and When you take a look at how good Jokic is, I mean, Jamal Murray, and I'm not saying he's not good, but you plug him into the Canadian Olympic team, which is a pretty talented team, he looks pretty pedestrian.
Yeah.
You put him in with Jokic, and he looks pretty doggone good.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing I think that makes Jokic so good is he elevates those around him because, you know, Michael Porter Jr., didn't have the greatest year last year. The guy I think is underrated for them is Aaron Gordon.
Yep.
I really like his game a lot. And then Mike Malone, one of the best coaches in the league, but they have slipped some. And I go back and agree with what you say. They need a talent upgrade around Jokic and they're not getting that.
Yep. Who'd you have in second, Tony? We got Oklahoma City and Minnesota.
I'm going to surprise you here a little bit, I think. I'm going Oklahoma City in spot two.
Okay.
I think I see Minnesota eclipsing them a little bit. The thing that I go back to is I really like the DiVincenzo signing.
Agreed.
With a trade. I think that's a huge piece for them. I think that you're going to see a very motivated Julius Randle. A lot of people don't know, but Julius Randle played for Finch when Finch was an assistant in New Orleans.
Okay.
And so I think he's happy to be back with Chris on the T-Wolves. And I think that as I go through there, I just think that once you get past Ant, I think he has a little bit better supporting cast than what Shea does. Not that the Oklahoma City doesn't have. I think those two are by far, because Dallas is in that conversation. But I think the Oklahoma City and Minnesota are the two best teams in the West.
I still gave Oklahoma City the nod by a game or two, but I could see it flipping now. That was when I wrote this, I wrote this on Monday before the trade. So I could definitely see that flipping. I really like what Minnesota did. And I think, you know, I think Randall and Kat, their production, their stuff, that's going to cancel one another out. I agree with you, Tony. The big thing is Dante DiVincenzo. And very rarely do you look at your six or seven, you know, piece, you know, they have two, six man of the year candidates coming off their bench now in Naz Reid and Dante, plus Randall again, kind of the in the same, you know, again, he's going to probably do about what Kat did, you know, thereabouts, or they're going to bring in Naz Reid. I just like their flexibility. But I do really, I think I still, I'm not, just for argument's sake, I'll go with Oklahoma City by a game or two in the division. Again, really deep, really long, really athletic, a lot of good talent, very well coached, as we know, Mark Daigneault, you know, coach Van Gundy the other day was singing his praises as well. I think it's going to be a heck of a run between these top three teams, and probably what in the regular season, what will distance that, you know, kind of put themselves, just the depth of Oklahoma City and Minnesota will probably extend themselves out against Denver and make it difficult for Denver to catch up to them. So,
you know, in Oklahoma City, with the moves they made, I really like the Caruso pickup, the Hartenstein, which led to the Knicks needing
That's
to
the
get
big one.
Kat.
Yep.
That was another good pickup for them. They've got some good young players. I think Oklahoma City is a really good regular season team. Where I get and think that the T-Wolves maybe have a little bit of an advantage is in the postseason.
Yep. I agree. Kind of like I think I said it between the Knicks and the Sixers. I'm going to take and that was the iteration of the Knicks that you had before. I would take the Knicks in the regular season, but if both teams are healthy, I would take the Sixers in the playoffs in a seven-game series. I'm going to say the same thing about Minnesota and Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City maybe a little bit more built for the regular season, but Minnesota built more for the postseason. That would be my assessment there. So, episode 103, Tony, handling failure. Anything else here for us here, buddy?
You know, the last thing I would throw out there, you know, you go through and take a look at how basketball has kind of evolved. And what I mean by that is if you wanted to get better, you know, you did like summer camp stuff, whether that was individual camp, team camp, whatever. Then, you know, it kind of went into the whole strength training with plyometrics and different things like that. I think the next big wave that you're going to see is like with the basketball would be like with the mental side of it. And I think you're going to see those mental coaches come in more and more, and they're going to be talking about the topic that we touched on in depth, and that is how to handle failure. And so I see that maybe being a new wave that you'll see athletes begin to go towards.
Yep. Agreed. Great episode. A lot of great discussions here today. Tony got the trivia on the first answer. We got some Arby's. We did a lot of really, really good stuff. Want to thank Ruiz Auto, again, just tremendous sponsors. We had work done last week, took care of us. If you're in the Omaha area, go check out Ruiz, 90th and Fort, just south of there. Juan Carlos and Esmeralda are absolutely awesome. If you've bought the book, thank you so very much. I so greatly appreciate it. If you haven't, I hope you make the decision to pick it up, because I think it's a really, really good read for you. I think it's, again, we've been up and down and all around, but I just want to express my gratitude for everybody that has purchased the book. And if you're planning on buying it, thank you very much as well. So for my co-host, Tony Devis, I am Marty Plum. This is The Coaching Staff, episode 103, Handling Failure. Hope you've enjoyed it. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.